This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in. Phenomena like telepathy, videotaping our dreams, implanting new memories into our brains, or performing telekinesis, they've long been the province of science fiction. But the rapid pace of international research in neuroscience and physics, along with advances in technology, have made or will make the impossible possible. Dr. Michio Kaku is a theoretical physicist, the public face of science for TV shows like How the Universe Works, and the best-selling author of numerous popular books on science, including Parallel Worlds and Physics of the Impossible. His newest book is The Future of the Mind, and in it, Kaku explores the secrets of the brain and mind from a physics perspective, the implications for future treatment for mental illness and paralysis to space travel are immense. Dr. Kaku will speak tonight in Milwaukee at an event hosted by the Milwaukee Center for Independence. It's an organization that works with people with disabilities. Dr. Kaku joined me on the phone from his office in New York. Welcome to Lake Effect. It is a pleasure and honor to have you on the show.
Well, glad to be on.
In your book, The Future of the Mind, you say the two greatest mysteries in all of science are the universe and the mind. Now, you're a theoretical physicist, so the universe seems to be a natural place for you to be exploring. What does physics bring to the exploration of mind that, say, neuroscience doesn't?
Well, I'm a physicist, and my day job, I work on the Big Bang Theory to try to understand what set off the bang. That's one of the great mysteries of the universe. But the other mystery can also be probed by physics. Physics now allows us to look at the living brain, to actually see blood flow ricocheting across the brain. And we can now, in the last decade or so, expand our knowledge of the brain much larger than the sum total of everything we knew about the brain beforehand. And so, believe it or not, sitting on your shoulder is an object that only takes 20 watts of power and yet can outperform a city block worth of advanced computers. And now, using advanced physics sensors, we're beginning to probe the secrets of the brain for the first time.
So you say the brain. Talk to me a little bit about the difference between the brain and mind.
Well, the mind, we think, is in some sense software. Software that runs on wetware, wetware being the brain. And however, now we're beginning to realize that perhaps we can actually separate the two. President Barack Obama and the European Union last year stunned the world by saying that they're going to spend $1 billion to create a map, a computer map of every neuron of the brain. So we're going to have a connectome, a disk in the future that contains all our neural pathways and, in principle, contains all our memories, feelings, and emotions. So in the future, we're going to have two disks. One disk is the genome, which is the genetic makeup of the body. And the other one is the connectome, which contains the neural connections of the human mind. And so we're going to have two disks, the connectome and the genome.
So is mind not dependent upon the bodies that house it then? It sounds like that it isn't.
Well, historically, we thought that perhaps there's something called dualism, that is, the soul existed independent of the body. Then neuroscience tells us, no, the mind is more like software that runs on wetware. But now we're going back to the Middle Ages. In some sense, we might be able to separate the two, in which case, in some sense, even after you die, your connectome lives on forever. And of course, it all depends on how you define you. If you define you as this organic object, then, of course, that decays after you die. But in some sense, your memories, your emotions, your thoughts, even your, quote, soul, might be preserved even after you die once we have the connectome. And by the way, I should point out that there's a reason why politicians in Europe and the United States want to dump $1 billion into this project. This is not just a science project. They want to tease apart mental illness. That's why they're willing to spend $1 billion on this project, because, of course, the financial toll taken by schizophrenia and Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and depression account for hundreds of billions of dollars in lost economic activity. And so mental illness, which goes all the way back to biblical times, is going to be one of the main targets for scientists as we try to figure out how the brain gets miswired to create mental illness.
So basically, the software is not working properly.
That's right. For example, when a schizophrenic hears voices, the left part of your brain generates voices. That's how you talk to yourself. We all do that. But the front part of your brain, the thinking brain, knows that the left part of the brain is generating voices. In schizophrenics, when you put them in a brain scan, you can actually see that their left side of the brain is active without their permission. So there is some kind of misconnection between the front part of the brain and the left part of the brain. And so the front part of the brain, the conscious brain, thinks that there's a mysterious voice coming from Mars or Jupiter or wherever, which is actually a voice coming from the left part of their brain. So a miswiring, in some sense, is responsible for madness. Madness we usually define as someone who's schizophrenic and hears voices. We cannot cure it, but we now know, in some sense, how it takes place when two parts of the brain don't communicate properly.
It's interesting. It sounds to me almost reductive in that we are only made up of this, but yet at the same time, we're bigger, or mind is bigger than the sum of the parts that create it, the physical sum of, you know, of the neurons. And I think maybe that's where the layperson kind of gets hung up on thinking about all of this stuff.
Yes, in some sense, the mind seems to emerge from the neurons of the brain, but not with computers. We can actually keep the neural activity going independent of the brain. In other words, we can even enhance this activity. By putting a chip on the brain, for example, we can connect the brain to a computer and have the computer control a wheelchair, household appliances, people who are totally paralyzed because of a stroke or a car accident or a football accident, can now have their brain hooked up so that they can control a mechanical arm, an exoskeleton, mechanical legs, a wheelchair, household appliances. They can read email, write email, surf the web, play video games. And so in some sense, we're liberating them from the physical limitations of their body. And so the pure mind is allowed to interact with the computer and, in some sense, allow these individuals to lead a semi-normal life.
That leads me to a story that you talk about in the book, the Isaac Asimov science fiction story about how we in the very distant future learn to explore the universe by literally separating our minds from our bodies and sending our minds out to explore for us, or maybe they are us. And is that the future that you see in the future of the mind, helping people who are paraplegic or helping people who, for whatever reason, are trapped in the physical body and are trying, you know, to live a life?
Yeah, let's separate short-term and long-term. The short-term goal is to understand mental illness and also to liberate the mind from a paralyzed body so that you can control an exoskeleton, you can control arms, legs, turn on the TV set, surf the web, write email. That's the short-term goal. The longer-term goal, however, now that we go into many decades into the future, once we have the connectome, a disc with all your memories and sensations on it, why not send it on a laser beam into outer space? We send information on laser beams all the time. That's called the Internet. Why not shoot the laser to the moon? In 1 second, your consciousness, in some sense, can arrive on the moon without a booster rocket, without a spacesuit. 1 second. In about 20 minutes, you can send your connectome, that is your consciousness, to Mars. In 4 years, you can send your consciousness to the nearby stars. And so eventually, again, this is now centuries into the future, there could be a network of laser beams connecting planets together by which you can send your consciousness almost instantaneously across tremendous distances. And perhaps it already exists. Some physicists have speculated that perhaps aliens in outer space have already set this up. And we are too ignorant to realize that there's an intergalactic telephone system by which intelligent beings are zapping themselves across the galaxy. Now, of course, that's science fiction, but it cannot be ruled out by the laws of physics. The laws of physics make it possible that one day we may have an intergalactic telephone system.
This, of course, makes me think, you know, science fiction also tells us or warns us through many dystopian stories about the negative of that, you know, the fact that consciousness separated that way can be controlled by people with nefarious intent. And how do you see that in the future? How do we guard against that happening?
Well, there are many potential pitfalls that I mention in my book, The Future of the Mind. For example, we can now, for the first time in history, record a memory and actually insert a memory back into the brain. This was done in mice last year. It'll soon be done on primates and monkeys, and eventually in Alzheimer's patients, so that by pushing a button, Alzheimer's patients will have a brain pacemaker. A brain pacemaker by which they can insert memories into their damaged brain. Now, of course, the misuse of this technology is obvious. If a criminal were to take a memory of a crime that you never committed and insert that memory into your mind, you may think that you actually committed a crime when you actually didn't. And so I think in the future, we will perhaps be able to upload memories of vacations that we never took. However, we have to be labeled. They have to be labeled so you know that this vacation that you're experiencing never happened. Because, of course, criminals may want to insert their memories into your mind without your permission. So this will have to be regulated because, of course, in some sense, the set of your memories is, in some sense, very close to who you are.
Exactly. And I'm sitting here listening to you say that, and I'm thinking, well, you know, there could be governments that would insert things in, too. It's not just individuals. And I think that fear of a totalitarian regime, you know, controlling its populace that way, you know, has certainly been the subject of many stories. And I think we're probably rightfully afraid of it.
Well, let's separate the fact from the fiction. First of all, some people think that one day a spy will have a device that reads your mind from a distance. Well, that's not possible. The kinds of miraculous interfaces with the brain that I mentioned are done by placing probes directly on the brain or a sensor right on the scalp. When you go a certain distance away from the brain, brain waves start to damp so rapidly that it mixes with all the background noise that's out there, and you hear gibberish. So no one's going to be able to listen to your thoughts from a distance. However, the problem there is not reading your mind from a distance. The problem is accessing memories, memories that perhaps of things that never happened. And I think these will have to be regulated in the future if this technology takes off. For example, the internet may be replaced by a brain net. A brain net by which we can send emotions and memories across the internet. This is physically possible. In fact, we've already done some of this with animals already. However, it has to be, again, regulated so that you know that certain memories are fake and they're labeled clearly so that people's sense of reality and unreality is not altered.
Who do you see doing that regulating?
Well, of course, this is still decades in the future. We are talking about steps that were taken just last year at Wake Forest University and at MIT. However, we can foresee the time now when more complex memories can be inserted. For example, the memory of you firing a gun. That would be a memory that would be relatively easy, I think, to record and then reinsert into a brain. And if you insert that memory into an innocent person, then perhaps he thinks he pulled the trigger, killing someone when he actually didn't. So I think eventually the government may have to regulate these memories. But again, I caution that this is still many, many, many years into the future.
Talk a little bit, if you would, about the idea of the quantum brain and how thinking about brain science in that way reveals new things about the mind.
Yeah, I'm a quantum physicist, and we're fascinated by the question of consciousness. Consciousness, of course, has been debated by philosophers for thousands of years. There are 20,000 papers written about consciousness, by the way. Never in science have so many devoted so much to produce so little. However, in my book, I give you a definition of consciousness and even a numerical scale by which we can rank consciousness. For example, an alligator, I think, would have a consciousness that's quite primitive, but an alligator understands its position in space. Monkeys have more complex brains because they understand emotions and relationships to other animals, not just their position in space. So what separates human consciousness from animal consciousness, I think, is the question of understanding tomorrow Animals do not understand tomorrow. They understand instincts of today and now, but the concept of scheming and strategizing and daydreaming is totally alien to the animal mind. So our brain understands not just space, not just emotions and relationships to other people, but also time. We constantly daydream about the future, and that's what separates human consciousness from animal consciousness.
So as physicists and neuroscientists work together and separately in their own spheres about the future of the mind, what do you think the future of the mind is going to be?
Well, when we talk about telepathy, telekinesis, uploading memories, recording memories, we have to realize that we can do all of the above. Physics has given us the capability of reading thoughts inside the living brain, of moving objects with the mind, of recording memories, and even photographing dreams. All of this was considered science fiction 10, 15 years ago, but because of physics, we can do all of the above. But this is a powerful technology because, in some sense, who we are is a function of who we were. And therefore, if you can alter these memories, you can, in some sense, alter your very notion of your existence.
So your sense of self, our sense of who we are, is going to change in the future. It sounds like what you're saying.
That's right. In the short term, we're going to enhance our abilities. We're going to be able to telepathically communicate with other people, send thoughts on the internet, control avatars and surrogates and robots mentally. We're going to enhance the concept of who we are. But then the question is, if you can have your connectome, then not only can you enhance who you are, you can also immortalize who you are. In some sense, your memories, your sensations, your emotions will become immortal and will live on even after you die. And perhaps in the next century may even explore the universe via laser beams. And so we're liberating the mind from matter. We're separating the mind from matter and liberating it, enhancing it. And perhaps that's the next stage in our evolution.
Well, I'm ready to go explore the universe. I would. That is something that I would love to be able to do. So it probably won't happen in my lifetime, but maybe, you know, a few generations down the road.
Yes, but if your connectome is recorded, then the essence of who you are may very well live to see the day when all of this is possible, because your memories, your thoughts, your sensations, your sensibilities, all of that could be recorded. Is this possible? I think the answer is definitely yes.
Well, Dr. Michio Kaku, thank you so much for your time today.
Okay, my pleasure.
Dr. Michio Kaku is a professor of theoretical physics at the City College and City University of New York. He's the co-founder of string field theory, a branch of string theory, and the best-selling author of numerous popular science books, including Einstein's Cosmos and The Physics of the Future. His newest book is The Future of the Mind, The Scientific Quest to Understand, Enhance, and Empower the Mind. Dr. Kaku will be the keynote speaker tonight at a gala event at Discovery World at Pier, Wisconsin, for the Milwaukee Center for Independence. The center is a nonprofit agency that serves children and adults with disabilities and their families. Coming up next, a three-day event next week focuses on some unconventional notions of innovation. We'll talk with the project's Milwaukee organizers when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.